Right. So, there are two Sidrot this week, but the first one is Matot. And we will hopefully be learning a discourse which was said in 1966, and it was the same basic thing as this year, that it was Matot and Masei together, and it was Mevorachim of the Chodesh, blessing the new moon of the month of Menachem Av, which is like El Shabbat coming up now. Now, at the beginning of Matot, we have the whole idea of the law of vows, nedarim, a neder, a vow. Vayedabe Moshe el Roshe Matot, Moshe spoke to the heads of the tribes. Matot literally means tribes. So he spoke to the heads of the tribes, Livnei Israel, of the Jewish people, Le'mor, saying, Ze adavar she'tziva Hashem, this is what God has commanded. Ish ki yidor neder l'Hashem. If a person makes a vow to God. So, and then follow various laws about vows. Now, if we look so that's the beginning of this week, etc. If we just look two verses higher, at verse 39, at the end of the previous sedra, which is on the same page. Now, the end of the previous sedra, last week's sedra, Pinchas, goes through all the offerings to be brought in the temple on the festivals. And so verse 39 says, Eile ta'asu la'Hashem b'mo'adechem, this is what you should bring, like you should do these offerings for God on your festivals. Levad minidrechem, apart from your vows, v'nidvotechem, and your nedavot, your offerings, like free will offerings, le'olotechem u'lumintchotechem, your burnt offerings, your flower offerings, u'niniskechem u'lishalmechem, your wine offerings and peace offerings. So in other words, there's the normal way of understanding this, they're all kind of private offerings, including vows. A person vows that he's going to bring an offering to the temple. But the actual sedra last week, the subject it ended off with was apart from those, not those. It spoke about the festive offerings, which are different, which are offerings which have to be brought on a festival. Okay, so the fact that last week's sedra ends on that note and this week's sedra talks about vows, we will find that connected up. And now we're going to explore the whole idea of vows. And what it's going to be talking about is the dimension of Judaism where you have things that are permitted and things that are forbidden, and then you have a kind of a neutral realm. There are things we have to do, you could say, and there are things that we're not allowed to do. And then there's a neutral realm, is the permitted realm. Now, what do we do with that permitted realm? One aspect of it is, you know, just take advantage of it. You know, it's permitted, so you can do it. Another way of thinking is sort of more, let's say, restraint. You know, you have the whole idea of restraint and indulgence within the framework of Jewish law. I'm not talking about someone breaking Jewish law, but the idea of restraint or indulgence. And this was a famous theme at the beginning of the Hasidic movement, when Hasidism was really a movement among Kabbalists. And the Kabbalists tended to be very ascetic people, fasting a lot and all kinds of extra self-restraining impositions. And then came Hasidism, and also often sort of a gloomy look at things. And then came Hasidism, which emphasized joy and in a certain sense spoke about the positive side of being in the world, this world. There's a positive side to that. Positive side to physicality when it's according to the Torah in a healthy way. So So that's really the theme of this discourse, which will relate, in a sense, to different kinds of people and different situations in the Jewish year, when restraint is more appropriate and when it's less appropriate. But it's telling us about the nature of our quest to make this world into a dwelling for the divine. And so that's what we're going to try and explore. It's not a very long discourse. Maybe we'll be able to get through most of it, or all of it even. So let's just start with the melody.
Can I just ask?
Yeah.
Was there an issue or an idea maybe that fasting was advocated by those who didn't have money to buy food?
No.
It was like all these, you know, select groups. They probably wouldn't have had that much money.
People may or may not. No one would recommend fasting to someone who can't afford food, because fasting makes you hungry. You get more hungry if you fast. So when you finish the fast, then you hope to have a good meal, you know. And you know, so as a voluntary fast, it's never thought of as a way of saving money.
No, not as voluntary, but because necessity, because they didn't have.
Yeah, but there's all the difference in the world. You see, a fast, you take on the, if you want to do a fast, the mincha before that day, at the end of the Tefillah Shmona Esra, you say, "Behold, I take on a fast." Mm. You know, and it's a whole extra dimension, because you can drink water when it's not a fast day. If it's a fast day, you can't even drink water. It's an extra imposition. Mm. People might have ended up going days without having much food to eat, but fasting is a different mode. It's not just not having food. Fasting is a dynamic approach that you're definitely not eating. Mm. You're not just not eating, you're not eating. You know, it is different. I would have thought.
It's, okay.
You know, because a fast is a result of a resolution. It's a resolution that the person makes. And he says it. See, the regular fasts come along anyway, like Tisha B'Av, which is the next fast that we're coming to, unless with the help of God the Messiah comes first, then we won't have Tisha B'Av, which will be another positive aspect. But Tisha B'Av is there, whether if you remember it, you don't remember it, it's there. Whereas the extra fast that the Kabbalists did, they resolved to take that fast on. And it was like an extra fast, apart from the five fasts which were in the Torah. Yes. Okay. Yom ba ya 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 yo ya yo ya ya na ya na yom ba mo yam ba yam ba ya ri ba re dam ba ha ya re dam ba ya ya re dam ba yom ba ho ya ya re dam ba yam ba yo ya ya re dam ba yam ba yam ha ya re dam ba ha ya Yamba, oh, yamba, yedimba, yamba, yedimba, oh, yamba, yo, yamba, boom. So, page 5. Vayedabe Moshe el Roshe Amatot. Moses spoke to the leaders of the tribes, Livnei Yisrael, of the Jewish people, them, all saying, Zeh adavah shetziva Hashem, this is what God commanded. Each ki yidon nedeh, if a person makes a vow. So now the discourse asks, v'tzarich lahavim, now we have to understand. Mao klalud inyan hanedarim. What is this whole concept of vows? V'hare itam yoshalmi, we learn in the Jerusalem Talmud, lo dayek amar sha'asra Torah, isn't it enough for you what the Torah forbade? The Torah gives us all kinds of rules which are forbidden. You mustn't eat this, mustn't do that. Why make an extra vow? Why should a person forbid for himself something which otherwise would be permitted? That's the whole idea of a vow. There's a certain thing which is permitted by the Torah, and the person vows he's not going to have that. Like the Nazirite, that's the most famous vow in a sense. He vows he's not going to drink wine, and he's not going to cut his hair, and he's not going to come near the dead. So that's the totality of the Nazirite vow. So why? Wine is permitted, cutting hair is permitted, it's actually a mitzvah to come near the dead and to bury someone. And yet the Nazirite takes on this extra vow. And then there are other vows. A person might vow he's not going to eat meat, he's not going to eat sweets. A person might take on various vows. So the Talmud, so the Jerusalem Talmud said, why are you doing this? The Torah forbids certain things, so don't do those things. Make sure you keep that properly. Why do something extra? Line 6. Gam tzarich lahavin, we also have to understand. Lama nemra parsha zulu hoshe matot dafka. Why is this told, this section is told by Moses to the heads of the tribes? All the other sections of the Torah, generally, they're said to the entire Jewish people. So it's a question, why is it told only to the leaders of the tribes? Now there's an interesting few commentaries on this. Rashi perash, Rashi explained, Chalak kavod lanasiim lelamdam tchila. What this means is that Moses was very respectful to the heads of the tribes, and he taught them first, ba'achar kach lechol bnei Yisrael, and after that to the entire Jewish people. Umosif, and Rashi adds, uminayin she'af sha'ad dibrot kein. And what about, how do we know that all other Torah teachings, it was the same? Moses first taught the heads of the tribes, and then the rest of the Jewish people. Talmud Lomer, and he gives a proof from a verse, Vayeshuva elav Aaron, mechol ha-nesiim be'ede, Aaron and all the leaders of the tribes came back to him, Vayedaber Moshe alehem, and Moshe spoke to them, Ba'achnei kein nikshu kol b'nei Yisrael. And after that, all the Jewish people came up to Moses. This was when he had come down the mountain the second time, with the second luchot. So there you have the leaders coming to him first, and then and Moses spoke to them, and then he spoke to the whole B'nai Yisrael. But there's still a question. Achadayin tzarech lavin, madua mashmia katuv inyan zeh, why is this concept that Moses gave honor to the heads of the tribes, why is it put, line 16, b'parshat nedarim dafka, particularly about this topic? And so, as Rashi then goes on to say, Umara la'amram kan, why does it say them here? Lamed, it's teaching us a very important halachic concept, and very important for this discourse. Shahafarat nedarim beyachid mumcha, that the cancelling of a vow can be done with one leading scholar. So in other words, if a person's made a vow, now let's say they regretted the vow. They vowed they're never going to eat meat. As a young girl of 22 or whatever. I didn't mean it. A person vows they're not going to do something. And then it turns out that that's a very inconvenient thing. So it's possible to have the vow repealed. It can be annulled. The vow can be annulled. And the way one annuls the vow, the way it says it in the Talmud and in Rashi here, is that one goes to a leading scholar, what's called Yachid Mumcha, a single individual who is an expert. So it's like a leading scholar, an important scholar. And that scholar is given by the Torah, he's given the power to annul the vow. Person comes and explains, well, when I made that vow, I didn't think this and I didn't think that. And as a result, the vow can be annulled. If it's not a leading scholar, if you haven't got a leading scholar available, three non-leading scholars, three ordinary people, like a bet din of three, can also annul a vow. So what Rashi is saying is that the fact that we learn this whole thing, that the vows, the laws about the vows are told by Moses to the leaders of the tribes, and in fact it was always done like that, but the fact that we hear that it was always done like that, in this case, with vows, is to tell us the importance of a leader of a tribe, because a leader of a tribe, he could be that single expert who can annul a vow. We have to understand what that is really talking about. Gam, line 18, then there's another point. Gam tzarich lavin, we also have to understand Masha katav habachai. Now, Bachai is a commentary on the Torah. Bachya ibn Pakuda, and he wrote a beautiful commentary, and he mentions there, no, sorry, it's not Bachya. It's Bachai. It's a different person. Not Bachya, but Bachai. So he wrote an interesting commentary on the Torah, and he makes the comment, Shenismacha pashat nedarim lepashat ma'adot. He says, why is our section of vows put next to the previous section about the festivals? And he explains what we looked at before, the way that the end of last week's Sedra mentions vows, right? It says, these are the offerings to bring on the festival apart from the vow offerings. So the Baha'i says that's why it's put together. You get the festivals and there it mentions vows, and then it comes up in our Sedra, it's about vows. So that's the continuity. That's the concept, the continuity of the Torah. And the Rebbe asks, well, still we need to have a deeper understanding, you know, why exactly that all fits together. All right, so that is the questions, as it were. So there's always a, or very often the discourse begins with certain questions, and then in order to understand the answer or to get an answer, we're introduced to a whole spiritual dimension. And here we have on page Vav, paragraph Bet, paragraph 2, Va'inyan Hu, and the subject is as follows. In order to give us the answer, we have to go back to why God created the world. So that's the typical thing in Hasidic thought, Chabad Hasidic thought, that there's some question asked about a verse, why does it say this, and it could have said that, and it said, well, to understand that, you have to understand why the world was created, and that's what we're looking at now. Why was the world created? Any suggestions?
Well, I know some of the Hasidic answer.
Yes.
That Hashem should have a dwelling place in a non-only spiritual world.
That's exactly, yeah. World. Yeah, and that's exactly the answer it brings over here, that Hashem should have a dwelling place in a world which is a lowly world. A lowly world means it's not all holy and spiritual, it's got negative aspects to it. And nonetheless, in such a world, Hashem should dwell in the form of us living in the world and keeping Torah, keeping the laws of the Torah, and connecting with Hashem. And in that way, Hashem is actually given a dwelling in this realm. And that's really the purpose of creation, that there should be a realm where godliness is concealed. That's a lower realm. That's what's meant by a lower realm. And in this realm, God should be revealed, after all. So it's a place where God is hidden, and then God is revealed. And we're the ones who do the revealing. So the subject is as follows. Dehine yedua, now it's known. Shenitave ha-kadosh baruch hu liyot lo dira betachtonim. God desired to have a dwelling in the lower world. Vahainu, that means Shahakavana hi, the intention is Shatiya Dirana Mata Dafka, that there should be a dwelling in the lower realm, below, in a problematic place. Shelachin Srichim Bnei Israel, and hence the Jewish people have to laasok bin Yaneha Mata. We have to be involved with things relating to this lower world. We're in a lower world, with physicality and all kinds of desires and passions. We have to somehow deal with that situation. Kedei levararam ulezakram, in order to purify them, in order to sift them and purify them. Last time, 2 weeks ago, we talked about the whole idea of purification, sifting. So here again, we're here in a world which is low, and where there are negative qualities, in order that we can use those negative qualities in a positive way and take them and somehow refine them. we're involved in materiality and in physicality, and that's a very important part of our lives, and we do it in the right way, as guided by the Torah. When we do it guided by the Torah, then that physical thing itself becomes something sacred and holy. Now, from this we understand that you shouldn't have vows. Vows mean abstinence, not doing something. Person vows they're not going to eat, let's say, a very delicious kind of food. So, honey cake. So this person has a tremendous passion for honey cake. They really love honey cake. They drool when you bring a piece of honey cake. If there's any suggestion, they walk into a home and there's honey cake baking in the oven, they start drooling. So this is a very, aggressively serious person. He says to himself, you know what? I like honey cake so much, I'm not going to have honey cake. Like my grandfather told me a story about Napoleon. Napoleon wakes, this is a story that they told in Eastern Europe 100 years ago. Napoleon wakes up in the middle of the night. He's in his army, camp. And he's thirsty. It's freezing cold, the Russian winter, right? It's 1812. And he wants to have a drink. So it's very easy. He's Napoleon. He's got soldiers around. He just has to click his fingers, get one of the soldiers to come and get a drink for him. The thing is that the pump where to get the drink is about a mile away. So you have to walk through the snow for a mile to get the water. But of course he could get a soldier to do this. Then he thinks, I, Napoleon, I'm going to ask a soldier. I'm so weak that I should ask a soldier to go and get me the drink. I'm going to get a drink myself. So he steals out of the tent in such a way that the soldiers on guard round its tent, they don't notice him. He goes out the back way somehow. And he walks to the pump. He walks a mile through the snow, gets to the snow, and fills up, there's some kind of bucket there, fills the bucket with water, and he's just about to drink. Then he thinks, what? I, Napoleon, walked a mile in the snow just to have a drink. Am I so weak? And he pours the water away and he doesn't drink it and he goes back to bed after walking a mile. So the point is, that's based in a sense on hubris, on feeling I'm such a great man, why should I be a slave to my passions? So the thing is that a person becomes an ascetic of some kind and he vows that he's not going to do this and he's not going to do that. So he's keeping away from the world. Whereas what we just heard is that the task of man is to be, and woman, is to be in the world, to be surrounded by these desires, and instead of rejecting them, use them in some way, adapt them, control them, yes. Don't be led astray by them, but nonetheless, use them as part of a healthy lifestyle, living according to Torah. So there is a suggestion that one shouldn't make vows, because we have to be involved with the world and use it in a healthy way. So vows are the concept of asceticism, of keeping away from things. As the sages said, nedarim siyag laprishut. Vows are a fence for asceticism. In other words, a vow is a form of asceticism. Ki kasher poresh midvarim amutarim. Now the thing is that if a person keeps away, if he says, I'm not going to indulge in this permitted thing, he doesn't elevate that thing. He doesn't refine it. There we have a chance, being in the world, to eat honey cake and use the energy from the honey cake in a positive way to serve God. And this person, he's so enthusiastic over honey cake that he decides, like Napoleon, he's not going to have honey cake at all. Uchiyadua Torah Baal Shem Tov, and as is known, the teaching of the Baal Shem Tov, going on this line that we have to positively use the world, ala pasuk, on the verse, ki tirecha mo sanacha. When you see, it's a very interesting law, when you see the donkey that belongs to the person who doesn't like you, and it's crouching under its load, there's a heavy load on the donkey, and it can't move properly, it needs someone to help it, and this donkey, you recognize it, it belongs to this guy who you and he don't get on for some reason. He's always parking his car in front of your house, and you mention it to him again and again, and the end is you don't talk to each other. And now, he not only has a car, but he's also got a donkey, and the donkey is squashed under the load. So the Torah says you've got to help that donkey, even though, and in fact the Talmud says, if there are two people, one's your best friend and the other one is your enemy, and both of them have donkeys crouching under the load, you've got to help the enemies first. So obviously there shouldn't be an enemy, and we shouldn't feel that they're an enemy. But the Baal Shem Tov changes this. So the verse says, Azov Tazovimo, you should help him lift up the donkey. So the Baal Shem Tov takes this word chamor, donkey. Now chamor also relates to the word chumriyot, materiality. The donkey is the material side of the person. And this very sort of spiritual seeking person, he might be negative to that. Like, that's why, you know, the one who doesn't like you, the one who challenges you, and he doesn't like these challenges. And so what the Baal Shem Tov says, no, you might think that the way that you have to work, the way that you have to serve God, a noba ofen shel shvirat hachumiyot. It's not, and that means putting you right. Don't think that the way of serving God is to break your material desires, your physical desires. Eila adarabah, on the contrary. Azov tazovimo, you have to use one's physicality in a positive way. Haynu shavodat tzricha liyot yachad im aguf. We have to serve God together with our body. V'nefesha bahamid, and the animal soul. So there's a certain sense in which the body has to be satisfied. The animal soul also. You use the animal soul in such a way that levararam lezakram, you purify and refine it. Shegam heim yitalu b'madregat elokut, they too should ascend to a sacred, godly level. But now, So we should try and work together with the animal soul and the body to purify them, so that they also come to a level of godliness. V'lechein amra Torah, and therefore the Jerusalem Talmud, as we quoted, said, Dayeko b'ma she'asarta she'asaratcha Torah. It's enough what the Torah already forbade you. V'ein la'adam le'asor la'atzmo dvarim ha'mutarim, and a person shouldn't forbid for himself permitted things, kevin shetachlit hakavanai biinyan haberurim, since the purpose is to sift out and purify and refine things which are permitted. Well, that sounds very nice. So according to where we've got to, it would seem, you know, the world's there for us to enjoy. And you know what? We're going to enjoy it as much as we can, but we'll put a little spin of holiness in it somehow. Do you think that will work?
No. Didn't you ever fast twice a week? Wasn't it reputed to have fasted twice a week?
Well, one of the things about, I mean, the Rebbe would go to the Ohel very often, to the grave of the previous Rebbe, and any day he went to the grave of the previous Rebbe, he wouldn't eat, as far as I know, till he got back from that. So he often fasted,
in effect. Presumably you'd go in day hours so that you could eat in the evening.
Yeah. Well, the Rebbe had a very strenuous regime. But we're not comparing ourselves to the river.
No, it was just, you know, like the stories they say about the thing, and you asked why didn't you enjoy this, or why didn't you do that, sort of a partake of the pleasures you were given type of thing. And I just popped up the thing from one of the stories that, of course, the river was supposedly fasted on at least twice a week, basically.
You hear what Nicole's quoting? She's quoting a passage from the Talmud, or of the sages, where they say, if you didn't enjoy something, you'll be asked, why didn't you enjoy that thing? Right? It's in other words, if you like strawberries, so buy strawberries and enjoy them. So here we come to a kind of a rather, it's an ambiguous approach. The Kabbalists would say, listen, you've got to be very ascetic, and don't buy the strawberries, and don't have the honey cake, and restrain yourself in all kinds of other ways, or some Kabbalists anyway. Then we have the idea in the Talmud. The Talmud tends to be very positive about physical life. And then we have this concept from the Baal Shem Tov. You have to use your physical body in a positive way. And then we have Chabad Hasidic teaching, which in a sense gives a kind of a view which combines these different concepts. Omnam. Now that's the word omnam, meaning however, on line 18, on this page, Vav. Omnam, however. Kol zehu ba'adam yasha holech. All that is with a person who goes straight. Ba'ayinu sholech b'derech ha'yashara. Person going on the straight route. Person who hasn't fallen down, overindulged, been addicted. Avumi shechata. Someone who sinned, someone who slipped. Ufagam va'avat ha'derech. Someone who is flawed in a sense, or caused a flaw, and has crossed over the path and done the wrong thing. V'ro'eh b'nafsho, he sees in his own self, she'i'ev shalo levareh et hadavah. It's not possible for him to refine this thing. Okay, never mind a former alcoholic. Let's talk about a former smoker. Okay, I'm a former smoker. Now, I just know that one cigarette, kaput, after 40 years. You know, I cannot elevate, refine cigarette smoking. You know, it is a great desire, which, thank God, I managed to give up, but it's lurking in the background. And so what the advice is, that if it's something that one can't deal with, azai ha'etzahi, then the advice is, sheporesh etzmo, separate from that thing. V'noder hana'a, well, we don't actually make vows, we avoid making vows, but, you know, in theoretical terms, the person vows he's not going to enjoy that thing, gamidava muta, he's not going to have it. Okay, you can argue with smoking that it's dangerous and it's not really permitted anyway, it's forbidden, but because of its bad effect on health. But imagine whatever it is, that it's something that the person has indulged in a negative way, and it's had a bad effect for them in some sense, and so therefore they say to themselves, I'm not going to try and get involved with that. I'm going to try not to be involved with it because I can't handle it. Right? Obviously, an alcoholic, someone who's come off alcohol, they can, you know, one drink is impossible, it's out of the question. Uchadivrei, as the words of the previous Rebbe, turning, Sheyeshno hapitgama yudur, that there is a phrase, a saying, which is popular in Chabad, it's on page Zayin now. It's in Yiddish. It's an interesting saying. Vos matonit, tomenit. What we're not allowed, we're not allowed. Und vos me make, and what we may do, darf man it, we don't need. It goes very nicely in Hebrew, which he's got in the commentary at the side. Hamutar miyutar. The permitted is unnecessary. So in other words, what's this saying? Let's just try and explore this. So there are things the Torah says we shouldn't do. Okay. So it says we shouldn't do it. And so that we shouldn't do, no question. That's it. We shouldn't do it. Okay, that's quite a struggle. It could be in various aspects of life to try and get to that point that since the Torah says we shouldn't do it, so we're not going to do it. Okay, but let's imagine that we managed to do this more or less. But then there's the whole permitted realm. So it's Ramban Nachmanides. Does anyone know when and where he lived?
Was he also in Egypt at some point?
No. Reb Moshe ben Nachman.
Don't know where he lived.
And do you know when he lived?
It was after Rambam.
Yes, it was. It was the generation after the Rambam. Reb Moshe ben Maimon.
It's Spain, isn't
it? It is Spain, yes. Yes, he lived after the Rambam and he lived in Spain. He lived a generation later and also. And he was in Spain and he was the leading rabbi in Spain. So on the verse, Kadoshim to you, you should be holy in the Torah. He says, what does it mean you should be holy? Is it telling you to be holy about like laws, you know, you mustn't eat non-kosher food. But that's the basic law of Judaism. What does it mean you should be holy? So he explains, Kadesh atzmecha b'muta lecha. Sanctify yourself in that which is permitted for you. Because, he says, it's possible otherwise to be, and he uses this interesting phrase, you can read script?
Mm-hmm.
Naval Birshut HaTorah. A Naval means a loathsome person. It's possible to be a low person with the permission of the Torah. A person can indulge himself, let's say, with food. Yeah, all the food is kosher. Not only that, it's glad kosher. But he eats in such an unpleasantly self-indulgent way that you would say this person's a naval. He's doing it in an unpleasant way that's coarse and unpleasant, but it's permitted. And you can find various other aspects of life where a person might indulge themselves in a way which is really excessive. Nachmanides lived in a Christian environment, lived in Christian Spain. But nonetheless, there were all kinds of social problems in his time, and the Jews living in the East, living in Spain, had not accepted Rabbeinu Gershom's law that a man should only have one wife. So it could well be that the Jews there had, I'm not quite sure if they had more than one wife, but once you have the idea of more than one wife, it can be a route to some kind of self-indulgence rather than the holiness and beauty which is there in marriage and should be there in marriage. And so there are various ways in which Ramban, on different aspects of a person's life, said a person can be a low person with the permission of the Torah. So this is the kind of concept here, that you've got something which is what is forbidden, and what is permitted doesn't mean that you have to say, oh, it's permitted, let's have it. If it's necessary to have, then have it. But just for the sake of indulging oneself, there's a question mark. You know, so that has to, that needs a lot of thought exactly how to apply that concept, and not all times are the same and not all situations are the same. You know, for a child, for example, you want the child to be happy and feel secure And you will indulge the child in various ways. The child can feel good. Whereas at an older age, it may be, you know, then there's you say, look, don't go out to play, stay in and do your homework. You know, and so that challenge of staying in and doing your homework. And the same, you know, and similar things as you in different aspects of life.
Isn't Neville much stronger, Neville, much stronger than a low person? I thought it was something closer to a rotten corpse or something like that.
Well, Nevela is a corpse. Nevela is a corpse. But a Naval, by itself, is a boor. It's a low corpse person. See, there's Nevala. Huasali Nevala. It would be slightly antiquated Hebrew. He did a horrible thing to me. You know, like... so it's like a low...
I've got this vague recollection of people calling other people. Yeah, that's the thing, you know, in a nice polite way.
could be. I mean, there's nibul peh, bad language, which again is from the same root. Yeah. Vahainu shlefish nimtzaba ma'amadu matzav. Now that might be that the person's in such a situation. Not just if he starts eating this thing, this wonderful honey cake that he's drooling about. If he eats it, not only won't he elevate the cake, but on the contrary, this cake, because he desires it so much, it'll drag him down. Therefore, he has to keep away from the cake altogether and forbid it for himself to protect himself. All right, so there is a stance. There is a stance like we're talking about two different approaches, and they are really part of life. You know, whether there is something that we sometimes enjoy, or we think it's really problematic and we're not going to do so, or it's something that we think is perfectly all right and normal, and it doesn't harm us in any way, we feel, in spiritual terms, and so therefore, or we can see clearly that it can be used in a positive spiritual way. So we are going to do it. So that relates to many aspects of material life. You know, should a person make a nice home? And, the Jewish teaching and Hasidic teaching promotes good living in various ways, in a positive way, to make a dwelling for God in this world, as it started off in its discussion. So now, having spoken about a person and the person's desires, it's now going to move in Gimel to the Kabbalistic realms, the four worlds of the Kabbalah. So that's Gimel on page Zayin. The Inyan Shnei Ofanim Hanal. Now these two ways in general, Bichlalut Olamot, in the generality of the world, so Achiluk is the difference, Shebein Olam Atzilut, Be'olamot Bria Yetzira Asiya. It's a difference in the world of emanation and the lower worlds. The world of Atzilut is pure. And as it says about it, that evil doesn't dwell there. It's called the world of unity. There, not only is God and the divine radiance one, but you see the sefirot are made of vessel and radiance. So the radiance of the vessel is always unified with God. But what about the vessel? The vessel in the world of Atzilut is also unified with God. So it's a very exalted realm where every aspect is unified with the divine. But in the lower worlds, there's the concept of separation. Shesham matchil inyan ha-pirut. There is the concept of separating from God. Va'ad l'metziyuk shel ra, till you get to a lower world, so much so that evil is there. Okay. And then he talks about different sfirot. And he compares it to the sfira of Bina. If we go on to page 10. The sfira of Bina compared with Chochmah. All right, so let's just try and look at this image. We have the world of Atzilut, which is pure, and then the lower worlds, creation, formation, and action. And then we also have, in Sfirot, we have wisdom, Chochmah, and then Bina, which is understanding. Now you see, wisdom is selfless and is very focused on the spiritual essence. And Atzilut also is pure. So I'm going to put like a blue line around Atzilut and about wisdom. But from these lower worlds, and for that matter from understanding, there can be, you can understand it this way, you can understand it that way, it can be something positive, it can be something negative. So these higher levels, wisdom in the Sfirot and Atzilut in the worlds, emanation in the worlds, they have this quality of purity. So it's like on that high level, you don't need any vows. If it's permitted, then it's good. If it's not permitted, then you don't think of doing it. Whereas when you come to a lower level, if it's forbidden, you may have a struggle not doing it. If it's permitted, you may have such a passion for it, it might lead in the wrong direction. And the same with understanding. Your understanding might lead you in a way which is itself problematic. It doesn't mention it here in this discourse, but the Rambam comments that when it says in the third paragraph of the Shema, you shouldn't go astray after your heart, after your heart and your eyes. So eyes means seeing something that you've got a passion for, right? A honey cake, or maybe something worse, a trefah cake, a non-kosher cake. And the person sees it and yearns for it and longs for it and can't sleep because he keeps thinking about it. So that's one thing not to go astray. Nicole can't imagine that. I don't mean honey cake.
In my case, it definitely wouldn't be. That's cheesecake.
Like cheesecake. Ah, now you're talking. Right. But there's also the heart. And what the Rambam explains by the heart is one's thinking. Our thinking can lead in a way which is very equivocal and very muddled up and gets us into all kinds of problems. Of course, you know, we should learn to think in a wholesome and positive way. But unguided thinking can lead one in very problematic directions. So on the higher level, in a sense, what is permitted is permitted. At the lower level, what is permitted still has a question mark. So that's the distinction that he's making here. Doesn't mean that it's forbidden, but it's got a question mark. And you have to assess what is appropriate and what is not appropriate. Okay, now let's go on to Dalet. So now we're going to another distinction concerning different times of the year. The Jewish year, a fascinating Jewish year, which is basically divided up into Shabbat, festivals, and weekdays. V'hine Dalet, so on page Chet, V'hine behol, k'shem sheyeshno chiluk, just as there is this distinction, b'makom, in place, whether it's worlds or sfirot. K'mochen yeshno chiluk gam zeh gam bezman. There's also that distinction in time. Shezel klalus hachiluk bein yomot hachol. That's the difference between weekdays, yamim tovim, festivals, v'yom haShabbat, and the Sabbath. V'inyan b'zeh, what this means is, dihinei nidba le'el, we've explained, b'inyan ha-berurim, concerning the sifting, the refining. Now, we actually learned this 2 weeks ago, sheyesh be'ru b'shaychut le'psolet. There's the idea of sifting the negative from the positive, or the positive from the negative, and then there's on a higher level where you're sifting good from good. It's all food, it's all edible, and it's all good, but you're just picking out something a little bit more good. But there is also taking out something negative from the food. That he used the image of silver, silver with dross, and you extract the dross from the silver. See, it's the same year. This discourse is from the same year as the one we learned 2 weeks ago. Now, so that means there is the service of the weekdays where we are taking away the dross from the good thing. And so the service of the weekday, we are encountering negative things. And we're trying to keep away from them. And there are lots of negative things in all kinds of different ways in the course of a day, you know, different aspects of what happens, what one confronts, what one sees, what is suggested, what is offered. And you just have to be careful the whole time. Yes, like going on the internet. You keep having little pop-ups and this and that and the other. You just have to keep away from it. So that is the refuse which we have to avoid. So that's like the weekdays. So we got the weekdays down here. Right? So they represent this avoidance of the negative and constant confrontation with the negative. Then we have a higher level. Omlam, that's two lines from the bottom, line 19. However, Gamba Yamim Tovim, also in a festival, Yeshno in Yana Biru, there's also a certain problem with festivals. Okay, so we're now on page Tet, page 9. It's interesting that the sages in the Talmud, and for that matter in the Zohar, speak about problematic aspects of festivals. And the code of law talks about the problematic aspect. I mean, the problematic aspect, as far as the code of law is concerned, is that what would happen on a festival in Eastern Europe 500 years ago? Boys and girls would go walking around on the river, and who knows what happened. Okay? So this was a problem. It was a day off, everyone was relaxed, no one was working, it was a festival, and there were all kinds of problematic things, you know, which people have or have not yet made films about, happening in the periphery of the Jewish community. So it was like a problem that was then a festival. On a weekday, everyone was too busy. So it's like an intriguing thing that there, Dafka, when it's a festival, so and people are more relaxed, you could have certain problems. And the way the Zohar puts it is slightly different. Talks about, I think it's the Zohar. It speaks about the need to have guests. The need to have guests on a festival. There's actually a mitzvah to have, there's a mitzvah to have guests anyway. But there's a particular mitzvah about on a festival to have guests, because there are verses in the Torah which speak about having guests, and then the sages come along and say, look, if the whole festival is only for your own self-indulgence, you make a lot of beautiful food, then you eat it yourself, you don't ever have a guest. It's not always so easy to have a guest, and you know, even to find a guest that's an appropriate guest. So, or even a not appropriate guest. but still.
They're easier to find.
But there is this sort of equivocal dimension of the festival. Shabbat, on the other hand, Shabbat is seen as something more pure. Shabbat is a time when eating is pure, even sleeping is pure. Shleina b'Shabbat tanug. To sleep on Shabbat is a delight. So there all kinds of positive dimensions as regards Shabbat. So we've got here the weekdays, the festival, which is still in this sort of area where you have to be careful, and then there's Shabbat at the highest level, which is like this exalted dimension. Right? So there we have the idea of not having vows, right? So everything which is blue, Atzilut versus the other worlds, wisdom versus understanding in the lower sphere, Shabbat versus the festivals and the weekdays. So that is the realm which the permitted is pure and holy. Obviously, you have to proceed carefully even on Shabbat, but that concept in ideal terms. And then there are different levels. A festival is easier than the weekday, but nonetheless, there has to be a certain level of care. So there we have a sense of how to prioritize, as it were, what's the concern, the care with which we approach physical indulgence and enjoyment. So now we move on to page Yud. The bottom 10, that's the bottom of the page number, line number 25. So he's now gone back to discussing the whole question of this chapter being told to the leaders of the tribes. And the question he asks is, the leaders of the tribe, why should the leaders of the tribes be told about vows? The leaders of the tribes are on this higher level. The leaders on the tribes are on the level where you don't have to have vows, right? They're on a higher level. It's like more the ordinary people who are likely to get trapped in negative behavior. They're the ones who need vows. He says, no, you don't understand it. This chapter is not about vows. This chapter is about annulling vows. That's what it's about. Acha inyan hu, but the subject is as follows. She'ika kavaru b'parsha zu, the main point of this section of the Torah, hu lo inyan ha-nedarim, it's not the theme of vows, ela adarabah, on the contrary, le'inyan ha-tarat nedarim. It's the concept of annulling vows. As we said before, shal pi Torah, lo tzarich liot inyan ha-nedarim. From the point of view of the Torah, there shouldn't be vows. Enjoy the world which is permitted to you by the Torah. V'zeo shepar shazu, now on to page 11. And that is why this section was said, ne'emra l'roshei ha'matot, was said to the leaders of the tribes, k'dei shehem yifalu atarat nedarim, telling them that they should be able to annul vows. Because the concept of annulling vows comes through a sage. He's able to uproot the vow, annul it completely. That means that the leaders of the tribes, the leaders of the Jewish people, and in a sense I think the Rebbe means a Rebbe, they should have the effect for the entire Jewish people. They should be in such a situation, an exalted situation, that they shouldn't need vows. So in other words, the sage has to lift us up to this level above the blue line that we don't need vows, that what is permitted is healthy. And in general, the idea of the sage releasing the vow, the thing that we said is forbidden, yeah, the man said he's not going to eat honey cake again. He vows not to eat honey cake. We don't advise anyone to make vows now. That relates to Kol Nidre on Yom Kippur. But that concept, the person wants to keep away from honey cake. But through the fact of the sage annulling the vow, what was previously forbidden becomes permitted. It's because of the radiance of the infinite, which is in wisdom. And it's a very exalted spiritual level. And that is the quality which is able to annul the vow and bring about that our lives become wholesome. Our lives become wholesome in the sense that everything we do becomes impregnated with a sense of godliness. And that's a very, very beautiful spiritual goal that everyone can strive for. That by keeping the laws of the Torah, all the different aspects of the laws, laws of kashrut and laws of everything else, we're able to make... Thank you very much. That we're able to make that our physical lives should have a spiritual dimension. And at the same time that it looks as if we are, and we are in a sense, we are enjoying the physical world, at the same time, the real focus is a spiritual dimension. And that is what we're able to achieve through the association, you could say, that's how I would interpret this, with the leaders of the tribes. That's what the leader of the tribe, someone like the Rebbe, and us learning the teachings of the Rebbe, that is what this helps us achieve, this sort of spiritual interaction, which enables us to transform our physical lives so that it's elevated to a higher spiritual level. And then finally, the last part, he connects back to the way that the end of last week's seder is about festivals. And since it's about festivals, that links into here. So it's festivals and vows, because the festival is in the dimension, unlike Shabbat, which does need the vow, but we transcend that. And so, therefore, we are seeking this higher level. Now, that's what we're seeking. We may not have achieved it. So if we haven't achieved it, we have to know ourselves well, to a certain extent, which is what, in a way, the study of Hasidic teachings is supposed to help us achieve, is a little bit to know ourselves, and to know what we can get involved with in a healthy and a wholesome way, in a positive way, and what we need to avoid. And for that, we need great seichel. Okay.